For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. What to do in difficult, uncertain times. Let's start with my wishes for all of us. May we accept things the way they are. May we be undisturbed by the comings and goings of events. May we be open so we see the moments of peace in our life. In stressful times, it's really important to look for those moments of peace, because we need that to build our inner strengths. So Rabbi Sharon Brous says, when the political reality clashes with our deepest hopes for humanity, we must practice resistance through compassionate listening, through tender presence, through curiosity, through deep awareness of one another's humanity, through truth-telling. We must practice resilience, patience, fairness, humanity. We must remember that we were born to love one another, that showing up for one another is a profound act of courage, that peace is possible, and that cynicism is a choice, and so is hope. When I read that, I thought, boy, I wish I could really be practicing this tender presence, this curiosity, this resilience, and the compassionate listening. But it's hard in difficult times. And so then you might want to look to people who you know have done that. And I'm lucky enough to have a teacher, Thich Nhat Hanh, who did that under horrific circumstances. During the Vietnam War, he was helping the injured and the innocent in Vietnam. And he was helping both sides. He was straddled in the middle. He wasn't for anyone or against anyone. He was just for helping people. And he did this over and over. And then he was exiled from Vietnam until just a couple years before he passed away. He was finally let back in. But yet, in his whole life, he exudes equanimity. If you watch a video of him, you'll just see how peaceful he is. And a quote from him, someone asked me, aren't you worried about the state of the world? I allowed myself to breathe. He always does that, allows himself to breathe. I don't do that all the time. And then said, what is most important is not to allow your anxiety about what happens in the world to fill your heart. If your heart is filled with anxiety, you will get sick and you will not be able to help. I think somebody mentioned not feeling very good. And this anxiety can just eat us and eat us. So practicing equanimity would be very helpful. The dictionary says equanimity means calmness and composure, especially in a difficult situation. And I think on the check-in, we heard that most everybody is in a difficult situation, whether it's the election or the passing away of a loved one, or just life in general gives us all sorts of difficult situations. And we need equanimity because it's the wisdom that protects our mind from discouragement and frustration. You know, we might feel like, well, okay, Trump won, there's nothing I can do. And we can't change the results of the election any more than we can change any other event that happened in the past. But there always is something that we can do. So we have to know that our lack of control is clear. I feel helpless, discouraged, frustrated because I can't change the election results. But I have to be willing and able to accept things as they are in this moment. Okay, this is how it's going to be. And I might find them frustrating, boring, exciting, disappointing. But it's the mindful presence that I'm not grasping onto something that I want and getting rope burn. And I'm not pushing something away, because as I try and push it away, I'm stuffing it down inside of me to carry that painful thing with me for the rest of my life. So equanimity is the middle ground between being indifferent and being overwhelmed. And I don't know about you, but I've been on that pendulum, swinging from indifferent to overwhelmed, and I'm trying to get it to slow down a little so it lands in that middle ground. You know, when things are too much, we can't shut down and stop caring. And that has been my tendency for most of my life. So on election day, when I saw Trump won, I didn't forego the news out of equanimity. I forego the news because I just couldn't deal with it. And said, what I did is I distracted myself. I went to the fabric store and picked out fabrics to make some placemats for my daughter-in-law. I worked on a plan to update the Snowflower website. I put my nose in a good book because those are distractions that I know. And I knew I just needed to be distracted. It was too heavy and too hard, and I didn't have the strength to deal with it at that time. So maybe to somebody looking at me, they would have thought, oh, the election results didn't affect her at all. But if you would look closely, you would see the tension and tightness in my body as I was doing all those things. So I was pretending like, oh, everything's fine, you know, go along. But my body knew it wasn't. I can't lie to my body. I was really sweeping what I didn't want to deal with under the carpet. And then on Thursday morning when I woke up, I swung to the other end of the continuum. I became really overwhelmed. Oh my God, this is terrible. And my prefrontal cortex shut down and my vision narrowed, making me really closed-minded. And all I could think of was potential catastrophes. This terrible thing's going to happen, and that terrible thing's going to happen, and why did those stupid idiots vote for him, and why, you know, what's going on with this world? What's wrong with our country? And on and on and on, until I finally remember Thich Nhat Hanh's question, are you sure? Because all those terrible things that my brain was telling me was going to happen, I don't know if they're going to happen. None of us know what's going to happen. So asking, are you sure, helped me kind of get out of that loop of despair. So when I woke up Friday, I decided I was going to try and be in the middle ground where the calm comes from a clarity of understanding rather than a sweeping under the carpet. And one of the things I did was read a New York Times article that talked about why this might have happened. And one of the reasons was about how inflation tapped into a loss aversion. And loss aversion is when losing something has much more weight for you than gaining something. And so even though wages have kept up or surpassed inflation, people still feel more pained by the sticker shock at the grocery store than elated by their gains in their income. And so understanding at least one cause that made people vote the way we did helped a little. You know, everybody voted because of causes and conditions they have, not because they're terrible people. But I was still feeling really restless and depressed. So on Friday morning, I had 30 minutes to meditate, and I decided I was just going to sit with my unsettled, mad, sad, frustrated, grief feelings. And they were really heavy, and my mind tried to distract me. Talk about monkey mind. There were more monkeys than were released in California, in my mind, jumping around. And each time my mind pulled me away, I just thought, no, come back to this feeling, this restlessness. Oh, this is what restlessness feels like. Or kind of depression. This is what heaviness feels like. Just come back and sit with it and let it be. And it's not like it's a silver bullet. The meditation didn't take care of it. I was still feeling really down. And we have to sit with our feelings, but we also have to titrate them. We maybe can sit with the feeling for a minute or two, and then maybe we need to, 30 minutes was really hard and really painful. And it may have been better for me to do 5 minutes and then maybe do metta or some loving kindness or something else. But I was feeling it and needing to feel it. But meditation just on the feeling or on your breath isn't always enough in a really difficult situation to calm your body down. You've got all this tension. And I realized it when I went to Oak Hill without my backpack that had my notes in the attendance roster. But I was going to teach about rain. And so it was not a real big deal. But when I was walking into Oak Hill, actually walking up the hill to the school, I realized that when I was meditating those 30 minutes, I was really doing the first steps of rain. I was recognizing what was going on, and I was admitting that, yes, this is reality, and feeling what that felt like to admit that this is reality. But I couldn't progress to the investigate stage because I was really stuck. I didn't have the internal strength. I barely made it through the class at Oak Hill. I've taught it many times before. So, and I've done rain enough that I can teach it, but I was feeling so down and heavy, and I just didn't have the internal strength. And so as I was driving home, I realized that I can't do rain in order. I need to skip to the nurture and navigate step, because I need to really figure out what is it that I need so I can move forward. Because if I don't, I could sit with those negative feelings forever and let my anxiety just paralyze me. So I was looking at, what is it that I really need? So I was kind of started looking around at advice in anxious times. And I came across a quote from Martha Beck. She says, "Most people who are anxious don't feel like being creative." And I did not feel like figuring out what I was going to talk about today, I'll be honest. But if you do something creative, anxiety can't function. This act of being creative helps us feel like we're starting to create a world in which we want to live. And when I read that quote, it was like, oh, okay, this is what I'm going to talk about on Monday, because I want to help start create a world in which I want to live. And so what I did was spent the day researching ideas of how do you deal with election stress. And there's plenty of people out there giving advice. But I just kind of looked through to see what is it that really would be helpful. And that ideas that I could share with you and that I can implement myself on how to deal with this difficult, uncertain time. And it's not just this difficult, uncertain time. It's every difficult, uncertain time that we're going to have in our lifetime that we can do these things for. So the first thing I thought was important was focus on what you can control. And Carrie Newcomer has a song, and in the song she says, "I can't change the whole world, but I can change the world I know, what's within 3 feet or so." So, yeah, I can't influence the election. I can't influence national politics very well. But I can influence the people around me with how I react to this and what I do. So I can influence things more locally than I can nationally. So making sure that I vote, making sure that maybe there's some community activism I should be doing, supporting local leaders who are thinking the way I think and want to keep things on track. Or another idea, which I would have never thought of, was supporting public interest legal firms who will be fighting to keep our rights as we need them. And what else can you control? Well, you can choose what media you're going to consume. You can choose how much news you're going to take in. And you can keep in mind that when you read the news, it's much less emotional and sensational than it is when you watch the news. So if you don't want to get yourself all buzzed up, don't watch the news, read the news. It becomes much less emotional. And set limits for how much you're going to consume. You know, we can look over and over and over at all the things the Democrats did wrong, or we can look over and over and over about all the things Trump might do. But we have to decide how much is enough. And we can do that for ourselves. And then there's all these little actions that we can take daily. I think the most important action that all of us can do each day is simply be kind, curious, and respectful. If we want to change the world within 3 feet or so, just be kind and respectful to everyone that we're interacting with. Maybe spend some time learning how to have conversations with people whose viewpoints are different than you. I think one of the problems with polarization is we don't know how to talk with people who have different viewpoints. And there is an organization called Braver Angels, who I've taken a workshop with them a few years ago on how to have these kind of conversations. So there's ways that you can learn to do that. And then open your eyes to the many basically decent people who think differently than you do. You know, we get this black and white, they voted for Trump, they're bad. But there's a lot of people who are very good and very caring. And due to certain causes and conditions and maybe misinformation, they voted differently. And if you just understand, when you're trying to talk with people with different viewpoints, if you're looking at them and feeling like they're bad, they're going to feel it. And you're not going to develop a relationship and you're not going to change their mind. But the only way is to really try to understand what they're doing. You know, and there's other things we can do. We can be more community-oriented by just helping out a neighbor, opening a door for someone, smiling at somebody, or things that are good for ourselves, like taking a walk in nature or doing something creative. Because if you're doing something creative, you won't be anxious. You can't be. Nkosi Johnson, who was born with HIV and developed AIDS, he died at about 12 years old. He was an author, and he says, do all you can with what you have, in the time you have, in the place you are. A 12-year-old giving us this advice. Let me read it again. Do all you can with what you have, in the time you have, in the place you are. That's so wise. So we need to figure out what can we control, what can't we control, and we need to do what we can. It's that serenity prayer. I've been talking about the serenity prayer with everyone I've talked with in the past 2-3 weeks. The next one is practicing mindfulness and stress relief techniques. You know, use the breath practices, like the square box breathing might be helpful, to recover your inner quiet. You know, when we were sitting here at the beginning, we were starting to recover our inner quiet. And that allows you to touch that inner goodness that's in each and every one of us. So rather than touching into our inner anger or our inner frustration, let's use the breathing to really help us touch into our inner goodness. There, according to Sarah Gottfried, a physician, there's a benefit to simply sitting with erect posture and breathing more deeply, even if your mind's monkeying around. You are still altering your stress response and getting on the path to retraining your mind. Meditation stimulates the vagus nerve, which is the most important nerve in your parasympathetic, the rest and digest nervous system. So the breath practices, and when I post the written version of this, I will include links to the breath practices for those of you who may not have them. And then use the inner strength phrases, and I'll put a link to those too, to fill your tank. Be kind to yourself. Give yourself that same compassion that you would give to a good friend. You know, we said, well, I couldn't talk to anybody because everybody else is grieving. Well, we know what they need. And if we talk to them and give them what they need, that's what we need too. Use taking in the good, that practice of just connecting with something that's beautiful or awe-inspiring and savoring it for 30 seconds. Because we need to orient ourselves right now to see the good. Because, boy, I don't know about you, but my vision is so narrow that everything looks bad. It reminds us of what we're taking for granted. You know, I was starting to take in the good, and I take for granted that if I look out my window when I'm doing yoga, there's a beautiful tree, there's a blue sky. At least this morning there's a blue sky, not always. But you take that stuff for granted and you don't appreciate it. So taking in the good helps you to remember, oh yeah, appreciate the good things, even though things really may feel like they are really bad. Use exercise or some kind of movement or time in nature to work off some of that nervous tension. You know, we can sit here like this and that doesn't really work off our nervous tension, because we're thinking about what's making us anxious while we're doing this. But if we go for a walk or a run or lift weights or something, we're really thinking about how we're moving our body and letting some other thoughts in besides just the anxious ones. Or if we're walking with in nature, we're looking around and seeing the beauty and letting other thoughts in. So we're kind of turning off the flashlight on our anxiety and turning on the floodlight of the whole world and what's really there. And we can also use relaxation techniques. You know, going to your happy place is not meditation, but it's relaxation. And you know what? In these difficult times, you might want to spend more time relaxing. You know, relaxing by listening to relaxing music, going to your happy place. Doing whatever relaxes you might be what you need more than trying to settle your monkey mind. If you're trying to settle it, if you can be with it and just practice bringing it back, that's great. But this is a time where relaxation, I think, is really important. And maybe use journaling, if that's your thing, to write down your feelings and try and make sense of what's going on. Sometimes when you write it down, then you don't have to keep it ruminating in your head. You've let it out, kind of. So there's a lot of mindfulness and stress relief techniques that we can use to help ourselves in these difficult times. The next one, and I kind of feel like this has been my soapbox lately, tease out fact from fiction in the stories you're telling yourself. No one can predict the future with absolute certainty. Our minds often fill in the gaps of the unknown with worst-case scenarios, but these fears are just possibilities, not certainties. If we accept that we don't know exactly what will happen, we realize our fears can't be absolute truths. In other words, we can't say with absolute certainty that our worst fears will come true. That's according to Alison Carman. And that's really important. We don't know what's going to happen in the future. You know, we don't know if Trump's going to be a dictator. We don't know if there's going to be mass deportations. We don't know about the million other things he might have said at one point or time or another that he was going to do. So, you know, he changes his mind a lot. He flips from one thing to another. So we don't know what's going to happen. And we could spend a lot of time playing what ifs in our mind and thinking about, oh, this is terrible. And all that does is keeps us ruminating. We get on that hamster wheel and we go faster and faster and we can't stop. But if we're like Thich Nhat Hanh, we can stop and ask ourselves the question, are you sure? Are you sure he's going to do this? Are you sure he's going to be allowed to do this? We don't know. And when we're not sure, we can say, okay, I'm not letting that story play in my mind, because all it does is revs up my anxiety. And I don't want to create a neural pathway that revs up anxiety, because I don't need the habit of anxiety. And I don't want to strengthen the neural pathway of looking at all the negative things. So don't let the story keep playing in your mind. Distract yourself with something that's comforting and relaxing. Go to your happy place. Listen to some music. Play with some kids. That's one of my happy places. Playing with my grandkids yesterday was just what I needed. So keep in mind, if you're having trouble saying, well, all these things are going to happen, that our government does have checks and balances that's designed to prevent any one individual, including the president, from having unchecked power. And you might not feel comfortable with the federal government, but state governments, citizens, the press, advocacy groups hold significant power in challenging policies and the actions they disagree with. And so, you know, there is some hope that it's not all going to go terribly. The next advice I have is to reframe your perspective. And Pico Iyer said, when the Dalai Lama faces questions about what to do with our grief and loss, he always uses the phrase, wider perspective, whether it's wider in time or in space. So I always want to avoid having too narrow a perspective, both in terms of just being caught up in this moment and also just being caught up in my little life and failing to see all the improvements in the world and all the possibilities. You know, we feel like, well, there's nothing we can do. It's true, there's nothing we can do to change the election results, but there's lots we can do if we broaden our perspective. And if we reframe our perspective from binary, Trump's administration is going to be a disaster, to maybe it's not going to be all bad. Some good things might happen, some bad things might happen. And we have to listen to Mr. Rogers, who said, look for the helpers. This is the time where we need to be looking for the helpers, because they're going to inspire us. And remember that history has shown us, if we look back, history has shown us that democracy is resilient. This isn't the first time that democracy was at risk in this last 250 years. Even in turbulent times, every administration has its ups and downs, but systemic change often happens incrementally. And I think that's part of the problem with polarization, is that we're looking for systemic change, but we don't want to be patient and let it happen as it does incrementally. We want it to flip to what we want, and that's why we've got this polarization. So we have to look for hopes in the stories of the positive change. If we widen our perspective, we'll see what's happening at the grassroots level in communities and in organizations that are working for progress. And probably one of the most important ones is talk about your concerns. You know, talk with your family, friends, those who are safe for you to talk with, about your feelings, because you need to process your anxiety and gain some perspective. And that can be helpful. I mean, that's why I decided today we should talk about this. Because here we are, a group of like-minded people, all on the path to being mindfulness and being better in reaching, you know, letting our inner goodness shine. When we're together, we can offer ourselves kind of a sense of purpose and concrete ways to channel our anxiety. I know as I was listening to the check-ins, There was all sorts of ways that people are doing to channel their anxiety into something that's more productive. And finally, the last thing is, do not beat yourself up for being anxious. Do not beat yourself up for feeling depressed. Anxiety and depression in difficult, uncertain times is a natural response. Research psychologist at Stanford, James Gross, said suppressing our emotions actually leads to the opposite of what we want. When we try to hide our emotions, we actually experience them more strongly physiologically. So we have to feel our emotions. And anxiety arises when we feel uncertain and we feel powerless. And I don't know about you, but that's exactly what I'm feeling these days. And recognizing that this anxiety is just a reaction to the political stress can help reduce the sense of feeling overwhelmed. You know, realizing that this is just natural. There's nothing wrong with me, and there's nothing wrong with the people in the world who are upset about this. It's just natural. We're not alone in feeling this way. You know, that's the third stool of self-compassion, is that common humanity. It's okay to feel anxious or upset, so we have to really be kind to ourselves as we navigate all these complex emotions that I still can't tease out. There's so many of them in there. But I know I have to be kind and let myself feel them. Because Howard Zinn says, an optimist isn't necessarily a blithe, slightly sappy whistler in the dark of our time. To be hopeful in bad times is not just foolishly romantic. It is based on the fact that human history is a history not only of cruelty, but also of compassion, sacrifice, courage, and kindness. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. Let me say that one more time. What we choose to emphasize in this complex history will determine our lives. If we see only the worst, it destroys our capacity to do something. If we remember those times and places, and there are so many, where people have behaved magnificently, this gives us the energy to act, and at least the possibility of sending the spinning top of a world in a different direction.